All this week, we're going to be looking at the impact of 9/11 10 years on. Later today, the exquisitely painful classical music to come from that day. Tomorrow, we'll ask, did Osama bin Laden win? After all, his stated goal was to destroy America's economy by forcing her on the military and security defensive. And today we're going to take a look at some of those costs. A team of academics from across the country joined Brown University's Watson Institute for International Studies and determined that the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq have cost the U.S. about $2.5 trillion and that the price tag will ultimately reach $4 trillion. That's far more than the $1 trillion figure President Obama cites, even more than the figure Nobel Prize winner Joseph Stiglitz and Harvard professor Linda Bilmes found in their 2008 book and research, The $3 Trillion War. Like Stiglitz and Bilmes, the Brown-Watson report tried to calculate the human and social costs, both in lives lost and the human and economic cost of caring for nearly 100,000 service members wounded during the wars. Catherine Lutz is an anthropology professor at Brown. She works at the Watson Institute for International Studies and is co-director of The Costs of War. She joins us now. Catherine, thank you.
Thanks for having me, Robin.
So just give us some easy-to-grasp reasons to start as to why your group pegged the cost closer to $2.5 trillion than, say, the president's $1 trillion.
Well, the economists that worked on this project tell us that there are really three ways to think about the cost of the war. One is money already allocated. The other is money obligated. We have to pay in the future. And the third is to look at the effect of the wars on the economy in general, and so look at families' economic well-being as the wars might have affected it. So our figures come out so differently from the president's $1 trillion because he's just citing the figure for the special off-budget war appropriations for the last 10 years. But he doesn't include three other kinds of money already spent, additions to the Pentagon base budget, additions to other federal entities like the State Department, Homeland Security. He doesn't include interest on the war debt that we've incurred already. And he doesn't include veterans' medical and disability payments.
Which you do. And then it blossoms out from there. For instance, we know that wars create jobs. And your study found that approximately 8.3 jobs are created for every $1 million in military spending. Doesn't seem like a lot for the jobs created. But you also then looked at jobs that are lost opportunities, as you put it, jobs that weren't created because money wasn't spent on something else. Give us an example of that.
Military spending, it does create jobs, and it's often assumed to be quite good for the economy. And it can have stimulative effects and obviously job creation effects, but it creates far fewer jobs than the same amount of federal spending in other sectors like education, construction, home weatherization, healthcare, and that's because these sectors are more labor-intensive than the military, more jobs for the same dollars. It's because, in addition, fewer of those dollars in education, healthcare, go overseas, as military spending often does. And it's also because the wages are more moderate in those sectors than the military, given how much weapons makers, in particular, and contractors make. The economist Garrett Peltier on our team estimated that an additional 800,000 permanent jobs would have been created over the last decade if the military spending had remained at the same levels and that additional funding had been allocated to these other sectors. I think one of the things that Stiglitz and Bilmes noted last year was that higher oil prices resulted from the invasion of Iraq, and that this helped create the recession by draining away wealth that would have fueled growth or could have helped cushion the economy when the housing bubble burst. So there's a number of other macroeconomic effects of war as well as war spending. Another thing is these wars have been very unusual in the extent to which they've been funded by borrowing as opposed to by increased revenues or the issuing of war bonds as in previous American wars.
You mentioned Joe Stiglitz from Harvard, sometimes seen as anti-war. I mean, some would say, oh, you just look for every single little thing to make war look expensive. What was the goal? What was the, if any, ideology?
Our goal here was not so much to talk about the goals of the wars or whether the goals have been accomplished, but to ask about what the full accounting looks like. And again, looking at $1 billion as a rounding error suggests, you know, how vast the scale of the spending has been and that we really should, as a public, have a sense of what those numbers are. We should also know what the death toll has been and who has paid the price for the wars. I think the idea that as scholars we should be contributing to the information that the public's operating with when we make decisions about going to war, fuller information is really crucial. And that's all we were trying to do, really, is to say, why should we be operating with a very distorted view of what the costs and benefits are?
In fact, let's take a look at what you calculated to be the human costs of war. Raw figures, more than 6,000 American troops killed in action, very easy to account. But you cite 125,000 Iraqi civilians. And there's been some debate over to exactly what the number is, maybe higher than that. And a lot of people feel much lower than that. So how did you source that?
Well, the number is clearly much higher than that. That is our most conservative estimate based on counts that have been done person by person in Iraq. And those are only deaths due to violence. What we know is that indirect deaths are sometimes multiples larger than direct deaths. In other words, deaths to civilians as a result of being dislocated and having less access to health care or poorer food supplies. And we have over 7 million refugees from these three war zones, really, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. And in those cases, people are under much more physical stress and emotional stress. And so the actual civilian death count has to include those deaths that wouldn't have occurred were it not for the wars.
Are you talking about, for instance, a civilian who can't get to a hospital because there's a skirmish going on, and so that death that might have been from an illness unrelated to war now goes in the category of war?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So someone who can't make it across a IED-infested road that they would have otherwise taken to health care, someone who was farming, feeding their family off of their land and are then fleeing a conflict and dealing with, you know, malnutrition in themselves and their children. So there's numbers of vectors by which wars create deaths other than through the bullet and the bomb.
Catherine, as we mentioned, the study found the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have cost about $2.5 trillion, but the ultimate price tag could reach $4 trillion. How much of that is money that everybody would want spent on care for veterans of the war?
Well, this is what's, I think, so important for us to understand is what these 10 years of war have created in terms of the need far into the future to deal with their consequences. The estimate is that somewhere upwards of $600 billion to almost $1 trillion in medical and disability costs will be incurred through 2051. Again, the war's injuries to young people are ones that they'll be coping with. And in some cases, they'll have some of the most difficult years of coping with their illnesses and injuries as they age. We know that the peak year for veterans' medical and disability costs for World War II wasn't until 1982. And so, again, into the 2030s and 2040s, we'll be very much having to take care of the people that we sent to fight these wars.
Could you say that again? So the veterans, and I'm thinking, you know, my dad became ill in the 80s, and he was a veteran of World War II. So the largest cost for World War II vets was in the 80s, 1980s.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And when you talk about costs, it's not just giving them medical care, it's what we lose in the economy because they're not there.
What Linda Billams did estimate is that the cost to the families of veterans who've been injured or fallen ill as a result of their service is quite staggering. She estimates into the future that $400 billion will be absorbed by military families uncompensated as they take care of their family member. And that involves, again, people who will step away from a paid job in order to become the caretaker.
And so as people do that, they probably, in many cases, walk right into federal programs that will try to help them as they care for, you know, they're going into Medicaid, more than likely, or things like that. So it just has this spiral, I guess, is the point.
Absolutely. We're talking about people who will eventually go on to Medicare or Medicaid. In some cases, there are local costs that we haven't put in here, but many local governments are coping with trying to help care for veterans as well.
Well, it goes further because you have some pretty grim statistics about what happens to injured vets. And sorry to characterize it this way, but no way around it. Iraq and Afghan vets are 75% more likely to die in car crashes compared to civilians?
Yes. Unfortunately, the effect of combat on those who serve is really can be quite disorienting, creating mental disorders and more chaotic behavior. They're more likely to get in trouble with the law than they would have been otherwise, and obviously dealing with physical injuries as well. Some of the connections between physical and mental illness are quite striking. People with PTSD and traumatic brain injury often have a whole constellation of symptoms. Veterans of this war have more symptoms, multiple problems in comparison with previous conflicts because their blast injuries or the kinds of psychological injuries that have occurred as a result of counterinsurgency have been more significant than previous wars. And also medical care improvements have meant that they have survived, as we know, with more horrific injuries.
There's also, you know, no draft, so these are troops that are signing up and in many cases going on 4, 5, 6 tours. So all of this factors in, and it's perhaps behind another statistic you found. The rate of suicides among vets is now twice that of the general population. But you touch on what people point to as, you know, a benefit of war, if you can put it that way. And that includes bringing democracy to Iraq and Afghanistan. Some would say a job that's not quite finished. The deaths of Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden. It seems callous to look at it this way, but does that figure into the financial calculation?
Well, I think a lot of things can't have a price tag put on them, including, you know, the suffering of civilians in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, the suffering of the service members who have gone and had to do work that is extremely difficult and have had to be separated from their families and have often been injured. When you ask about the price tag for bringing democracy to Afghanistan and Iraq, I think the first question is, are either of those countries democracies at this point? The Democracy Index, a widely used ranking of the world's countries, puts Iraq and Afghanistan down quite low on the world's list. Iraq's classified as a hybrid regime, somewhere between a flawed democracy and authoritarian regime. Iraq ranks worst in the Middle East in corruption. There's also, you know, again, Afghanistan is in no one's view at this point a democracy. It ranks 150 out of 167 countries in the world.
And what about the deaths of Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden? Is there any dollar, you know, it sounds macabre, but is there any dollar amount attached to that?
I know. I think there are more bodies attached to that than dollars. I mean, yeah. One has to sort of say, what did the people of Iraq and Afghanistan, what were the trade-offs that were made for them in terms of their lost lives and injuries? It is kind of macabre.
Yeah.
It is tough.
So why do it? What do you hope the study achieves?
I think what we hope to accomplish is to make it clear that no government should ever take a country to war without having done a full assessment of what it truly will cost. And to miss a billion here or a billion there wouldn't be a problem. But I think to miss hundreds of thousands of injuries, hundreds of thousands of deaths in that calculation is really unacceptable. And we should really have a very clear sense of not just of what the history was here over the last 10 years, but of what would be at stake in the next call to arms.
Catherine Lutz is co-director of the study The Costs of War from Brown University's Watson Institute for International Studies, where she is an anthropology professor. Professor Catherine, thank you.
Thanks, Robin. It's great to talk.